New heading. Four autobiographical responses. Because we listen autobiographically, we tend to respond in one of four ways. We evaluate, we either agree or disagree. We probe, that is, we ask questions from our own frame of reference. We advise, we give counsel based on our own experience. Or we interpret. We try to figure people out, to explain their motives, their behavior, based on our own motives and behavior. These responses come naturally to us. We are deeply scripted in them. We live around models of them all of the time. But how do they affect our ability to really understand? If I'm trying to communicate with my son, can he feel free to open himself up to me when I evaluate everything he says before he really explains it? Am I giving him psychological error? And how does he feel when I probe? Probing is like playing 20 questions. It's autobiographical. It controls. And it invades. It's also logical. And the language of logic is different from the language of sentiment and emotion. You can play 20 questions all day and not find out what's important to someone. Constant probing is one of the main reasons parents do not get close to their children. How's it going, son?
Fine.
Well, what's happening lately?
Nothing.
Well, what's exciting in school?
Not much.
What are your plans for the weekend?
I don't know.
Yet you can't get him off the phone talking with his friends, but all he gives you is a one- and two-word answer. Your house feels like a motel where he eats and sleeps, but he never shares, never really opens up. And when you think about it, honestly, why should he? If every time he opens up his soft underbelly, you elephant stomp it with autobiographical advice, and I told you so's. We are so deeply scripted in these responses that we don't even realize when we use them. I have taught this concept to thousands of people in seminars across the country, and it never fails to shock them deeply as we role-play empathic listening situations, and they finally begin to listen to their own typical responses. But as they begin to see how they normally respond and learn how to listen with empathy, they can see the dramatic results in communication. To many, seek first to understand becomes the most exciting and the most immediately applicable of all of the seven habits. Let's take a look at what might well be a typical communication between a father and his teenage son. Look at the father's words in terms of the four different responses we have just described.
Boy, Dad, I have had it. School is for the birds.
What's the matter, son?
Probing.
It's totally impractical. I don't get a thing out of it.
Well, you just can't see the benefits yet, son. I felt the same way when I was your age. I remember thinking what a waste of time the classes were, but those classes turned out to be some of the most helpful to me later on. Just hang in there. Give it some time.
Advising.
I've given it 10 years of my life. Can you tell me what good X plus Y is going to be to me as an auto mechanic?
An auto mechanic? You've got to be kidding.
Evaluating.
No, I'm not. Look at Joe. He quit school. He's working on cars, and he's making lots of money. Now, that's practical.
It may look that way now, son, but several years down the road, Joe's going to wish he'd stayed in school. You don't want to be an auto mechanic. You need an education to prepare you for something better than that.
Advising.
I don't know. Joe's got a pretty good setup.
Look, son, have you really tried combination of probing and evaluating.
I've been in high school 2 years now. Sure, I've tried. It's just a waste.
That's a highly respected school, son. Give them a little credit. Advising and evaluating.
Well, the other guys feel the same way I do.
Do you realize how many sacrifices your mother and I have made to get you where you are? You can't quit when you've come this far.
Evaluating.
I know you've sacrificed, Dad, but it's just not worth it.
Look,
Maybe if you spent more time doing your homework and less time in front of TV.
Advising, evaluating, even interpreting.
Look, Dad, it's just no good. Oh, never mind. I don't want to talk about this anyway.
Obviously, his father was well-intentioned. Obviously, he wanted to help. But did he even begin to really understand?
Let's look more carefully at the son, not just at his words, but his thoughts and feelings, and the possible effect of some of the dad's autobiographical responses.
Boy, Dad, I've had it. School is for the birds. In other words, he's saying, I want to talk with you to get your attention.
What's the matter, son?
You're saying that you're interested. Good.
It's totally impractical. I don't get a thing out of it.
He's saying, I've got a problem with school and I feel just terrible.
Well, you just can't see the benefits yet, son. I felt the same way when I was your age.
Oh, no. Here comes chapter 3 of Dad's autobiography. This isn't what I wanted to talk about. I don't really care how many miles he had to trudge through the snow to school without any boots. I want to get to my problem. The father goes on.
I remember thinking what a waste some of the classes were, but those classes turned out to be the most helpful to me later on. Just hang in there. Give it some time.
The boy feels, time won't solve my problem. I wish I could tell you. I wish I could just spit it out. Instead, he says, I have given it 10 years of my life. Can you tell me what good X plus Y is going to do me as an auto mechanic?
An auto mechanic? You've got to be kidding.
The boy thinks, he wouldn't like me if I were an auto mechanic. He wouldn't like me if I didn't finish school. I have to justify what I said.
No, I'm not. Look at Joe. He quit school. He's working on cars and he's making lots of money. Now that's practical.
Son, it may look that way now, but several years down the road, Joe's going to wish he'd stayed in school. The son, feeling, oh boy, here comes lecture number 16 on the value of an education.
You don't want to be an auto mechanic.
The son feels, how do you know that, Dad? Do you really have any idea what I want?
You need an education to prepare you for something better than that.
I don't know. Joe's got a pretty good setup. He's thinking, Joe's not a failure. He didn't finish school, but he's not a failure.
Look, son, have you really tried?
We're just beating around the bush, Dad. If you'd listen, I'd really like to talk to you about something important. But instead, he says something that's safe.
I've been in high school 2 years now. Sure, I've tried. It's just a waste.
Son, that's a highly respected school. Give them a little credit. The son thinks, oh, great, now we're talking credibility. I wish I could talk about what I want to talk about.
Well, the other guys feel just the same way I do.
In other words, I have some credibility, too. I'm not a moron.
Do you realize how many sacrifices your mother and I have made to get you where you are?
Oh, no, here comes the guilt trip. Maybe I am a moron. The school's great. Mom and Dad are great, and I'm a moron. The father goes on, you can't quit when you've come this far. The boy responds, I know you understand, Dad, but it's just not worth it. Feeling, you just don't understand.
Look, maybe if you spent more time doing your homework and less time in front of TV.
The boy feeling, that's not the problem, Dad. That's not it at all. I'll never be able to tell you. I was dumb to even try.
Look, Dad, it's just no good. Oh, never mind. I don't want to talk about this anyway.
Can you see how limited we are when we try to understand another person on the basis of words alone? Especially when we're looking at that person through your own glasses? Can you see how limiting our autobiographical responses are to a person who has genuinely tried to get us to understand his autobiography?
You will never be able to truly step inside another person to see the world as he sees it until you develop the pure desire, the strength of personal character, and the positive emotional bank account, as well as the empathic listening skills to do it. The skills, the tip of the iceberg of empathic listening, involve four developmental stages. The first and least effective is to mimic content. This is the skill taught in active or reflective listening. Without the character and relationship base, it is often insulting to people and causes them to close up. It is, however, a first stage skill because at least it causes you to listen to what is being said. Mimicking content is easy. You just listen to the words that come out of someone's mouth and you repeat them. You're hardly even using your brain at all. Like this little dialogue. "Boy, Dad, I've had it. School is for the birds." The dad responds, "You've had it. You think school is for the birds." You have essentially repeated back the content of what was being said. You haven't evaluated or probed or advised or interpreted. You've at least showed that you're paying attention to his words. But to understand, you want to do more. So the second stage of empathic listening is to rephrase the content. It's a little more effective, but it's still limited to the verbal communication. The son says, "Boy, Dad, I've had it. School is for the birds." The father responds, "You don't want to go to school anymore." This time you put his meaning into your own words. Now you're thinking about what he said, mostly with the left side, the reasoning, logical side of the brain. The third stage brings the right brain into operation. You reflect feeling. "Boy, Dad, I've had it. School is for the birds." The father's response. You're feeling really frustrated. Now you're not paying attention as much to what he is saying as you are to the way he feels about what he's saying. The fourth stage includes both the second and the third. You rephrase the content and reflect the feeling. The son says, "Boy, Dad, I've had it. School is for the birds." You're really frustrated about school. Frustration is the feeling. School is the content. You're using both sides of your brain to understand both sides of his communication. Now, what happens when you use fourth stage empathic listening skills is really incredible. As you authentically seek to understand, as you rephrase content and reflect feeling, you give him psychological air. You also help him work through his own thoughts and feelings. As he grows in his confidence of your sincere desire to really listen and understand, the barrier between what's going on inside him and what's actually being communicated to you disappears. It opens a soul to soul flow. He's not thinking and feeling one thing and communicating another. He begins to trust you with innermost feelings and thoughts. Going on with the dialogue. "Boy, Dad, I've had it. School is for the birds." In other words, "I want to talk with you to get your attention." The father responds, reflecting both content and feeling. "You're really frustrated about school." The son responds, "I sure am. It's totally impractical. I'm not getting a thing out of it." The father reflects. "You feel like school's not doing you any good." "Well, yeah. I'm just not learning anything that's going to help me. I mean, look at Joe. He dropped out of school and he's working on cars. He's making money. Now that's practical." The father reflects. "You feel that Joe really has the right idea." "Well, I guess he does in a way. He's really making money, but in a few years I'll bet he'll be ticked off at himself." Notice how the father again reflects. "You think Joe is going to feel like he made the wrong decision? He's got to. I mean, just look at what he's giving up. I mean, if you don't have an education, you just can't make it in this world." The father doesn't agree or disagree or advise or probe. He just reflects. Education is really important. "Oh, yeah, I mean, if you don't have a diploma, you probably can't get jobs or even go to college. What are you going to do? You've got to get an education." The father reflects further. It's important to your future. It is, and you know what? I'm really worried. I mean, listen, you won't tell Mom, will you? See, most people immediately would agree or disagree with that, or teach the child a little about how parents communicate with each other. But instead, this father continues to reflect. You don't want your mother to find out. Well, not really. Oh, I guess you can tell her. She'll probably find out anyway. Look, I took this test today, this reading test. Dad, they said I'm reading on a fourth grade level. I mean, fourth grade, and I'm a junior in high school. What a difference real understanding can make. All the well-meaning advice in the world won't amount to a hill of beans if we're not addressing the real problem. And we'll never get to the problem if we're so caught up in our own autobiography, our own paradigms, that we don't take off our glasses long enough to see the world from another point of view. I'm going to flunk, Dad. I guess I figure if I'm going to flunk, I might as well quit. But then I don't want to quit. Now notice this brilliant, reflective response by the father. You feel torn. You're in the middle of a dilemma. What do you think I should do, Dad? You see, now he wants the father's autobiography because the father understands. By seeking first to understand, this father has just turned a transactional opportunity into a transformational opportunity. Instead of interacting on a surface, get the job done level of communication, he has created a situation in which he can now have transforming impact, not only on his son, but also on the relationship. By setting aside his own autobiography and really seeking to understand, he has made a tremendous deposit in the emotional bank account and has empowered his son to open layer upon layer and to get to the real issue. Now father and son are on the same side of the table, looking at the problem instead of on opposite sides looking across at each other. The son is opening his father's autobiography and asking for advice. Even as the father begins to counsel, however, he needs to be sensitive to his son's communication, his response. As long as the response is logical, the father can effectively ask questions and give counsel. In other words, probe and advise. But the moment the response becomes emotional, he needs to go back to empathic listening. So the father responds, "Well, I can see some things you might want to consider, son." "Like what, Dad?" "Like getting some special help with your reading. Maybe they have some kind of tutoring program over at the tech school." "Huh, I've checked into that. Two nights every week and all day Saturday. That would take so much time." Sensing emotion in that reply, the father moves back to empathy. "You feel like that's too much of a price to pay. Besides, Dad, I told the sixth graders I'd be their coach." Again, the father reflects. "You don't want to let them down. But I'll tell you this, Dad, if I really thought that tutoring course would help, I'd be down there every night. I'd get someone else to coach those kids." "You really want the help, but you doubt if the course would make a difference. Do you think it would, Dad?" The son is once again open and logical. He's opening his father's autobiography again. Now the father has another opportunity to influence and transform. There are times when transformation requires no outside counsel. Often when people are really given the chance to open up, they unravel their own problems and the solutions become clear to them in the process. In a way, it's like opening up an onion, many, many layers before you get to the inner core. Now, these scenarios could have gone in many different directions. I know that. I'm only giving them as illustrations of how people can gradually learn to understand other people through reflective listening, listening to both feeling and to content, and doing it sincerely, deeply, not manipulatively. It's not saying that those other responses, those autobiographical responses, don't have a place. Of course they do. But when you're really trying to understand another person and they're deeply involved in these emotional issues that are jugular to them, really vital to them, the key is empathy. And it's the one skill most people have never been trained to use. I ask audiences all the time how many have had more than 2 weeks of training in how to listen. It's no more than 1% raise their hands. And yet everyone will raise their hands when you ask them what kind of training they've had and how to read, write, and speak. Many times people do need additional perspective, wisdom, and help, but they're only open to it when they really feel they are understood first. The key is to genuinely seek the welfare of the individual, to listen with empathy, to let the person get to the problem and the solution at his own pace and time, layer upon layer. Again, it's like peeling an onion until you get to the soft inner core. When people are really hurting and you really listen with a pure desire to understand, you will be amazed how fast they will open up. They want to open up. Children desperately want to open up, even more to their parents than to their peers. And they will if they feel their parents will love them unconditionally and will be faithful to them afterwards and not judge or ridicule them. If you really seek to understand without hypocrisy and without guile, there will be times when you will literally be stunned with the pure knowledge and understanding that will flow to you from another human being. It isn't even always necessary to talk in order to empathize. In fact, sometimes words may just get in your way. That's one very important reason why technique alone will not work. That kind of understanding transcends technique. Isolated techniques only get in the way. When heart really begins to understand heart, you can communicate without words. I have gone through the skills of empathic listening because skill is an important part of any habit. We need to have the skills. But let me reiterate that the skills will not be effective unless they come from a sincere desire to understand. People resent any attempt to manipulate them. In fact, if you're dealing with people you're close to, it's helpful to tell them exactly what you're doing. Say something like this: I read this book about listening and empathy, and I thought about my relationship with you. I realize I haven't listened to you like I should, but I want to. It's hard for me. I may blow it at times, but I'm going to try to work at it. I really care about you, and I want to understand. I really do. I hope you'll help me. You see, affirming your motive is a huge deposit. It often dissolves the old image they have of you, and they see you in a new way, as someone who genuinely cares and wants to understand. But if you're not sincere, I wouldn't even try it. You may create an openness and a vulnerability that will later turn to your harm when the person discovers that you really didn't care, that you really didn't want to listen, and then he's left open, exposed, and hurt. The technique, the tip of the iceberg, has to come out of the massive base of character underneath. Now there are people who protest that empathic listening takes too much time. It may take a little more time initially, but it saves so much time downstream. The most efficient thing you can do if you're a doctor and want to prescribe a wise treatment is to make an accurate diagnosis. You can't say, "I'm in too much of a hurry. I don't have time to make a diagnosis. Just take this treatment." I remember writing on the north shore of Oahu, Hawaii. I was in a small room. There was a soft breeze blowing, and so I had opened two windows, one at the front and one at the side, to keep the room cool. I had a number of papers laid out chapter by chapter on a large table. Suddenly, the breeze started picking up and blowing my papers about. I remember the frantic sense of loss I felt because things were no longer in order, including unnumbered pages, and I began running around the room trying desperately to put them back. Finally, I realized it would be better to take 10 seconds and close one of the windows. Empathic listening takes time, but it doesn't take anywhere near as much time as it takes to back up and correct misunderstandings when you've already gone miles down the road, to redo, to live with unexpressed and unsolved problems, to deal with the results of not giving people psychological error. A discerning empathic listener can read what's happening down deep fast and can show such acceptance, such understanding, that other people feel safe to open up layer after layer
until they get that soft inner core where the problem really lies. People want to be understood, deeply, earnestly, and whatever investment of time it takes to do that will bring much greater returns of time as you work from an accurate understanding of the problems and issues and from the high emotional bank account that results when a person feels deeply understood.